Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Normally, good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. Today, we're going to be all crazy, but first, a quick update to yesterday's good martini. Jim, it looks like after 2 years, we finally can confirm there's no fog on the mirror. Mullah Muhammad Omar is officially dead. The Taliban confirmed it. Apparently, it takes a little longer over there for that information to get out to the media.
Apparently, they sent the news by carrier pigeon. And considering the state of Afghanistan, somebody shot down the carrier pigeon so with a drone. No, this is just good news. I'll sum up my viewpoint on Mullah Omar. He knew the risks going in. You mess with America, our policy is an eye for an eye.
All right, on to crazy martini number one. And yesterday, Jim, it's one of those days where if you're on social media, you really just wanted to stop the planet and get off because of all the things that had many people just frothing at the mouth yesterday. It's the death of Cecil or Cecil, depending on how you say it, the lion, who until 48 hours ago, no one in America really knew. But now, of course, everyone's just appalled over the fact that he was killed by this hunter who was on a safari. He's a dentist, and apparently there's some confusion over how this lion got lured out of a protected area and eventually killed. And obviously there's a lot of people who want the head of this dentist. You got Mia Farrow sending out publicly where his office is. You got just outrage after outrage. And so obviously a lot of people on the right are wondering, why is there so much outrage about the lion but so much yawning over the selling of fetal body parts? And one of the people who made that point, Marco Rubio, says, look at all this outrage over a dead lion, but where's all the outrage over the Planned Parenthood dead babies? He got this, again, frothing at the mouth response from a lot of different liberals. One who says, how do you sleep at night spewing vitriol like this? Hunted and executed versus a woman's right to choose shouldn't be compared ever. Another person called it Rubio succumbing to the Trumpification of the Republican Party. And Jim, I think maybe the biggest head shaker for politicos like us is that The Hill actually reported the dentist was a Romney donor.
There you go. Perfect. We can walk and chew gum at the same time, right, Greg? I mean,
yes.
Could you be upset about a lion being killed and say Planned Parenthood's egregious lying about the, you know, what we now know is on video or, you know, deaths of innocent people in Iraq and Syria or the homeless? You can have more than one concern, right? Or we just decided, no, if you're concerned about one thing, you cannot be concerned about anything else. And then the flip side of that is that, you know, it's fair for Rubio to make this observation that, you know, look, there's human suffering that people are kind of, we're not going to think about that much. Finally, I just kind of one little point to add on this, that if the allegation that the lion was brought, you know, somehow lured off of a territory, a reserve in which it is protected, then this fully warrants all of the you know, being upset, the outrage over things like that. The flip side, though, if it wasn't, then there are a lot of people who are just flat out anti-hunting in general and think lions are beautiful. They're thinking of Simba and Scar and all the crap from The Lion King. And, you know, all through my Twitter feed yesterday, Greg, we were hearing, a-wee-mo-wee, a-wee-mo-wee, a-wee-mo-wee. Yeah. If it was done in some sort of effort to work around the law, then yes, it deserves all the upset. My understanding is that lion populations are actually up in recent years. The fact that there is a hunting, people enjoy hunting them, has created an enormous incentive to keep the lion population alive in those areas. And you're probably saying, well, how can that work? Well, the idea is that, you know, all of a sudden in that part of Africa, there's a great incentive to make sure that lions have enough food, have enough territory, and that they're protected enough to reproduce to make sure there's going to be lions around a generation from now, two generations now, three generations now, so that more and more wealthy dentists can come and shoot them. You know, this is actually, you see this phenomenon with fisheries. You see this phenomenon with wild deer populations here. Hunters generally don't want to hunt an animal to extinction because then they can't go hunting anymore. So there just going to be seen a lot of knee-jerk, reflexive denunciation and fury that warrants our first crazy martini today.
I got to give points on Twitter to the best response to this, John Podhoretz, who said, clearly the people who are most outraged and basically want to lynch this dentist are anti-dentites.
Ah, very good. Very good.
All right, on to the second crazy martini now. Jim, I don't know about you, but it's kind of hard if you just try to list all the presidential candidates for the Republican nomination on a sheet of paper. You almost always leave at least one of them out. Well, now that job just got a little bit harder, and it also ruined our perfect Sweet 16 bracket. Former Virginia Governor Jim Gilmore has now thrown his hat into the race, so that makes 17 Republican candidates for the nomination. Gilmore was governor of Virginia in the late 90s, early part of last decade. He also ran for president in 2008, which many people probably don't remember. He did so well, he lasted long enough to drop out and still get into the Senate race that year, in which he lost to Mark Warner by about 30 points, which obviously was a pretty big Democratic year. But Jim, Gilmore has conservative credentials, clearly, but a lot of people wondering why.
Here's what warrants this, the second crazy martini of the day. He actually had indicated his interest in running back in an interview with the Richmond Times-Dispatch about 2-3 weeks ago. You and I greeted him with perhaps a wee bit of skepticism. because one of the things he had said in the interview is, like, well, I was a governor of a state that was, you know, during the 9/11 attacks. Ironically, one of the other, you know, no chance, what the heck is he doing here? I didn't know he was still alive candidates. George Pataki was also governor of state during the 9/11 attacks. You don't even have that alone in the field. So, you know, there was again, as the 17th candidate in a 16 candidate field, he was largely forgotten. There was a great deal of skepticism. Everybody was kind of wondering, well, where have you been? Right? I mean, it's not like the cause of conservatism, the Republican Party, hasn't had any big high-profile fights in the last, 7 years or so. You feel like you kind of wandered in from a desert island somewhere. And here he is 2-3 weeks later. And as far as you and I can tell, has he done anything to address this skepticism?
No, I haven't heard anything other than the fact yesterday that he filed his paperwork.
It's the same. It's kind of like the Hillary reset button. They're like, no, I'm convinced. I really am the right guy for this. And the other thing he said in that interview, which there seems like almost a deliberate obtuseness, where he said, well, I'm not the most charismatic, you know, race in the field, but he kind of downplayed the idea. This isn't a race about charisma. Is there any lesson from the Obama era, Greg, bigger than, yes, political races are heavy on charisma?
That's one of the big ones.
I mean, if your strategy is, no, I am not a charismatic candidate, and that lack of charisma, the fact that people aren't interested in me, the fact that they're bored by me, the fact that they generally don't like me, is what is going to drive me to the Oval Office. What are you doing here, Jim, the governor? Why are you here? Are you lonely? I've tried to be really patient with the Lindsey Grahams and everybody else of the world, but governor, if you don't come up with a better explanation, I don't know how much serious coverage he warrants, since it seems like he's just kind of doing this on a lark and with, you know, no preparation, no money, no background, no team of support, no grassroots organizers, any of that kind of stuff.
Do you need those, really, though?
He's got a business card. That's about it. Printed one out. There you go.
On to the third crazy martini now. And the thing you want most from presidential candidates is clarity on key issues. What are you going to do? How would you address this issue if you get to the presidency? This is one that's been controversial for a long time. A lot of people have different opinions. Tell me what you will do, Hillary Clinton, when it comes to the Keystone Pipeline. Here's the question she got. I think it was in New Hampshire.
Would you sign a bill, yes or no, please, in favor of allowing the Keystone XL pipeline?
This is President Obama's decision, and I am not going to second guess him because I was in a position to set this in motion, and I do not think that would be the right thing to do. So I want to wait and see what he and Secretary Kerry decide. If it's undecided when I become president, I will answer your question.
I'm going to tell you right after you vote for me.
Kind of like what Nancy Pelosi said about Obamacare, Greg. You have to elect Hillary to see what policies she would enact. Just like you have to pass the bill in order to see what's in it. Now, I remember back in 2007, 2008, Greg, when Hillary Clinton was running for president the first time, where her attitude was, well, I don't answer hypotheticals. Greg, isn't President Hillary Clinton a hypothetical?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, you're basically saying to the electorate, I want you to imagine me as president. I want you to think about that. I want you to envision what would happen, see how good that makes you feel, and thus you should vote for me. And if a candidate really is going to say, look, I'm not going to answer any hypothetical questions or scenarios, well, everything in politics, in a political campaign, is about a hypothetical scenario. It's about a possibility of what would you do in the future. Basically, Hillary Clinton has said she doesn't want to talk about what she would do as president, but she wants you to vote for her as president. And there we go.
Oh, man. She's off to the best start we could have hoped for, really. I mean, between the scandals and her just wooden nature on the campaign trail, this is...
But, clearly, here's the thing. Even if she wants, I see how I'm kind of just sputtering in response to her that answer. Because, like, the guy's very clear, yes or no, right? Do you want the Keystone or not? And my sense is that if you're a Democrat, look, you know, she started this process in motion back when she was there. And she became, you know, this has been sitting on the drawing board for 6 years. And Obama has effectively said no, right? When you don't move on something for close to 7 years, that means you don't want to see it happen, right? It's not just, oh, we just haven't waited for – I'm waiting for just the right moment to approve, you know, construction of Keystone. Then Obama spoke about it really, really skeptically, that all the jobs of the Keystone pipeline would be temporary, Greg, unlike all the shovel-ready infrastructure jobs. Because if you build a highway, those jobs of construction last forever. But if you build a pipeline, those jobs are temporary, at least in Obama world. I'm kind of like – what's interesting is that she's basically – trying to leave the window open a sliver, though maybe someday I might approve it. But she doesn't want to actually come out and say, yes, I would. And I think it's safe to say that based on the experience of the Obama administration, if you want the Keystone Pipeline built, you can't vote for a Democratic administration. Because what they'll do is they won't even give you the dignity of a no. They'll say, well, we're still reviewing it. We'll get to it. It's kind of like this administration sometimes responds to FOIA requests 4 years later. Right, I mean, that's effectively a way. Like, I'm sure the reporters forgot what the heck they requested. People move on from their jobs over a 4 year span. Endless delay is effectively a no. And what's interesting is that Hillary seems to think, you know, the electorate doesn't pick up on that.
Amazing, crazy day, Jim. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.